You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution. To get more in-depth analysis and commentary from our scholars, subscribe to the Brookings Cafeteria Podcast on iTunes, download on Stitcher, or find on our website at brookings.edu/BCP.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mireya Solis. I'm Senior Fellow and Night Chair in Japan Studies here at Brookings. It's a pleasure to welcome all of you this morning to this very exciting program. When we first hosted a seminar on womenomics here at Brookings in the fall of 2003, this was a very new concept to people in the audience. But now, womenomics has become a very familiar term to many of us. The efforts of the Japanese government to increase the rate of female labor participation, to encourage Japanese companies to embrace diversity and change their hiring and promotion practices, to tackle shortages in childcare services, these are, of course, very commendable and well-known efforts. Significant progress has been made, but quite frankly, a lot remains to be done. But we chose the term Womenomics 2.0 because I actually wanted to highlight what I think is a critical aspect of encouraging, promoting women's participation in the economy that has not received the attention it deserves. And that is, how do you encourage, nurture female entrepreneurship? To be quite frank, if womenomics remains confined to the established corporate structure, it will be incomplete. An equally sustained effort is required to allow women to strike out on their own, to launch their businesses, to launch their products. This is a tall order. I think we're all very clear about that, because women in Japan face two challenges. One is that entrepreneurship in general is not widespread in Japan for a host of reasons that I'm sure we're going to discuss here today. The underdevelopment of venture capital, legal hurdles that make it very hard to recover from bankruptcy, and quite frankly, perhaps cultural barriers that make it very hard for individuals in Japan to engage in risk as they pursue new businesses. So there is that sort of challenge. But on top of that, you have the additional hurdles that women face, would-be entrepreneurs face, when they try to think about that new possibility. And that is the lack of access to those assets that are widely perceived as essential to success. What assets do I have in mind? Well, access to business networks, to financing, to technology, to distribution channels, to reach markets at home and abroad. So the list of challenges is long, but the opportunities are also significant. Entrepreneurship offers Japanese women the opportunity to bypass rigid corporate hierarchies, to custom tailor their schedules to better achieve work-life balance, and the opportunity to tap on their ingenuity, on their creativity, to identify new business opportunities. We have a very distinguished set of panelists, of speakers today, to walk us through these very important topics. We will start with a presentation by Mitsue Kurihara on the challenges of promoting female entrepreneurship and the very important work that she is doing with the Development Bank of Japan to achieve these. Ms. Kurihara founded in 2011 the Women Entrepreneur Center to support new female-run businesses. She currently serves in the DBJ's board, and I should note that she is the only female in the DBJ board. And just chatting with her before our coming to the stage, she also was at some point the only manager, and she's always been the trailblazer, it seems to me, in the DBJ. After Ms. Kurihara's presentation, we'll move to a panel of female CEOs, and I will make the introductions of these very talented women then. But for now, Ms. Kurihara, if you can please come to the podium for your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Saris. It's my pleasure to meet you today. My name is Mitsue Kurihara. I'm an audit and supervisory board member of DBJ, Development Bank of Japan, and the founder of DBJ Women Entrepreneur Center, or WEC. And thank you for providing me an opportunity to introduce DBJ initiatives related to women entrepreneurs. I have learned a lot from our activities and connection with women entrepreneurs. Today, I will talk about that and introduce recent situation on female-led businesses in Japan. First, I will introduce two women. They are winners of DBJ competitions. Rie Yano, on the left side, is the president of Material World. Her business is a luxury fashion trading service. She started her business in New York City, and her co-founder is a Chinese woman. She set up her company drawing on her experience with Mitsubishi Corporation and Coach. She hopes in the future bring her business to Japan. I think she represents a new type of women entrepreneur. Second woman on the right side is Rika Yajima, a founder and CEO of Aeru Companies. Aeru in Japanese means combined together. She uses traditional handcrafting methods to create products for infants and children. She launched her business during her fourth year of college with the aim of connecting children in the next century with the tradition in Japan. In 2011, before Abenomics started, I launched the DBJ Women Entrepreneur Center to encourage and support women in new businesses. The DBJ WEC holds business plan competitions for female entrepreneurs and provide comprehensive support in areas including finance, network building, business matching, and startup skills and experience. Why did I launch the center? Women-led businesses from new perspectives are the driving force for renewed growth and social change in Japan. Our expectations are rising for female businesses in terms of both quantity and quality. It means women are expected to boost the labor force under the current condition of a decreasing population. Compensation for the potential manpower of women will add 1.5% to GDP growth. In addition to that, women-led businesses bring new value to the entire society. Our activity is significant from three perspectives. First, Japanese Prime Minister Abe's Japan Revitalization Strategy includes support for women, both employees and entrepreneurs, but mainly employees. Women who develop their careers playing active role in companies, including at the management level, are one model for women active roles in industry, like me. And women who choose startup new businesses is another model. Both types of participation are equally important, I think. The second perspective, Entrepreneurial activities by women are key factors to recover earthquake disaster affected areas, especially in the community business and food business sectors. In fact, of all new businesses started in disaster-affected area in 2012, 40% were by women entrepreneurs. Finally, since 1980, Japan's business startup rate has been less than its business closure rate. It is important to increase the startup rate and create innovative businesses. This bar graph shows the 2010s entrepreneurial activity in various countries. The lack of female entrepreneurial activity in Japan is obvious. Japan's male entrepreneurial activities is also among the lowest. You can see this one. I have heard about many concerns and issues for women entrepreneurs. Some issues such as fundraising and sales channels and markets are also common with male entrepreneurs. However, others are more significant among women, such as insufficient business experience and management knowledge, fewer opportunities to bring network either for personal exchange or for meeting other people in similar positions. And finally, the issue of work-life balance. As women typically bear more housework and family responsibilities in Japan, therefore, most startups by women are low risk but offer little chance to growth. As I see it, we need to create an environment that helps women take on projects that carry risk as well as strong growth potential. Let's take a look at actual condition of female businesses. In 2014, women accounts for a mere 16% of startup entrepreneurs. In 1991, the figure stood at about 12%. So this does show some modest growth over the long term. There had been a decline around the time of the financial crisis, but the percentage is rising again as the economy begins to recover. As for corporate performance, the men's firms are more likely to be in the black, 70% compared with 60% for the female firms. From a time series perspective, the profitability of women's firms overtakes that of women's firm after about 3 years. But there is a flip side to this trend. Firms run by women have a higher rates of closure, 19% compared to 15% for men. It would seem that because failing women's companies tend to close quickly, that those remain are strong. Therefore, we created a new support platform. I will next introduce DBJ initiatives. The DBJ business plan competition focuses on women firms. Applications from the 4 competitions to date number more than 1,500. The target of the competition is not only to find female businesses, but also to create momentum for female businesses with innovation and growth potential. The grand prize is 10 million yen. It is about $85,000 to support winner's startup. Also, a follow-up mentoring and support package program is beneficial. We help brush up business plan through mentoring for 1 year and provide support in terms of management skill, business matching with potential business partners, including DBJ clients, network building, and opportunities to take part in DBJ-led training programs. We facilitate external connection with experienced entrepreneurs and expert mentors. We also offer seminars in cooperation with a wide range of outside institutions, such as an accounting firm, the Japan Federation of Bar Association, and regional banks in each region. Oh, I will skip this slide. The target entrants of DBJ's competitions include first-time businesses and second starts. Why second starts? In Japan, many women become owners by taking over a family business. They take on new business challenges, the restructuring of their firm, and other entrepreneurial activities. In the competition, we evaluate innovation, business feasibility, and management capacity. After 3 stages of examination are complete, including documents, interviews, and presentations, we announce the winner and finalist at the award ceremony. Here, you can see one award ceremony. Mentoring is extremely helpful for women. However, mentoring is quite difficult at times. Since we are dealing with different fields of business and stages of project development, mentoring is customized to winners' individual needs. Sometimes, the winner's wants and needs are different. In such a case, we will find a way to bridge the gap. And sometimes, the winners and the mentor have bad chemistry. In such a case, we will switch to another mentor. Although mentoring is scheduled to last for a year, progress may not be as planned. Through my experience, we have learned that instead of aiming for exact number, for example, a certain increase in sales, it is better for the startups to establish or build up its business base during the mentoring period. A base that can be further developed independently after the mentoring period ends. There have been a lot of trial and errors, but we are continuing to work with our competition winners to improve the quality of mentors. Mentoring. We have noted a certain characteristics and trends regarding women entrepreneurs in the program. Let's see how these have changed over the last 4 years. Numbers. The first competition attracted more than 600. The second has less than 200. The third, about 300. And the fourth, about 400. Applicants have been increasing steadily since are rebounded after the second competition. Helped by an improving economic environment and the government's series of growth strategy, women are finding many opportunities for startups. And applications from regional entrepreneurs are increasing as well. Regions. More than half were from the Kanto Koshin region, which includes Tokyo. The ratio from ratio for the Tokyo metropolitan area is high in comparison with the scale of its economy, which seems to make it a good place for entrepreneurial activities. However, I think the outlying regions offer more to female entrepreneurs. Regional business women have been prominent among the finalists selected each year. This is because regional women have easy access to local resources and have been active in addressing familiar problems such as education, community planning, nursing, or welfare. Business fields. The range of business fields is broad. 24% involved lifestyle-related services. Others addressed education, medical care, ICT, fashion, food and agriculture, and so on. Interestingly, Japan's famous monozukuri, which means creative manufacturing, was underrepresented in comparison with the large number of service industries. Age. Although our applicants ranged in age from their 20s through their 70s, the greatest number were in their 30s and 40s. Each accounts for one-third of the total. The average age was 24. For Japanese women who have been forced out of the workplace due to the marriage and child raising, starting a business is one means of re-entering it. Experience. DBJ's competition is the first competition for its kind for 76% of its entrants. Its attraction for them lies in its female focus, which is a source of motivation, and also in the many types of support provided to winners. Some features are common to all women-led startups. However, we have seen some changes from year to year. One has been a rise in the social nature of the projects. A growing number of incorporated IPOs are entering the competitions. These entities want to move from charity work and become more independent and commercial. A second change, which is related to the first, is the increasing advance of businesses addressing social issue in Japan, such as after-school care program or a project to raise global awareness of Japanese culture and a project that addresses the problem of unoccupied old houses under the decreasing population. A third change is the growing diversity of entrepreneurs. Of the 60% who left work after having children, many are concerned about a lack of skills and other resources when starting businesses. However, in the past 2 years, growing number of entrants have been embarking on startups after accumulating work experience that they can use to their advantage. There are also many women who have aimed at entrepreneurial activities, entrepreneurial careers, since their student days. The diversity of background and careers among our applicants is quite remarkable. Fourth, we have seen a notable improvement in the business plans submitted each year, and many women are using the competitions and awards in their careers. I have learned a lot from the competition and connection with entrepreneurs, women's entrepreneurs. I again realize the importance of their new businesses, which are spread across the industries. These women-led businesses are addressing the challenges facing society and communities, viewing them as opportunities. They use local resources and corporations, and their commitment can be described as passionate concerning social aspects and with sense of mission. Their ideas are outside the box and combine many services to create added value. On the other hand, I have found that business plans have large capacity for consideration due to lack of management resources, especially human resources. Finally, for the growth of new business, it is important not simply provide funding, but also support further networking, business matching, and management know-how. It's vitally important. Where finance is concerned, new methods are needed to serve entrepreneurs who have neither individual credit nor a business history. A Japanese practice of using personal guarantees has long inhibited business startups, but there have been improvements following a notice by the Financial Service Agency. I also anticipate an improvement in the scale and quality of Japan's venture capital, which is currently a mere one-tenth the scale of that in the U.S. I see a need to promote crowdfunding, a mechanism that connects new and growing companies and investors online to raise small amount of funds from many investors. I have also realized the importance of improving child care and nursing care in Japan. It is essential that we create women-friendly work environment and change social behavior such as long work hours. I will not touch the DBJ financial project for advancement of women today, but support for women is a project for the DBJ group as a whole. This concludes my presentation. Thank you for your attendance. Thank you.
We're going to use these mics.
Kurihara-san, thank you so much for this very insightful presentation and for the very important work that you do. I'm afraid because of time constraints, I'm just going to ask you one question and then we'll move on to our panel of entrepreneurs. But this question has to do with your own entrepreneurial spirit. As you noted, you launched this center to promote female-run businesses before Abenomics, before the promotion of women's participation in the economy had become a priority issue for the Japanese government. And also, from your own background, as I noted in the introduction, you have been one of the first women to reach positions of leadership, of seniority in the DBJ. So if you can tell us a little bit about what motivated you to launch this center, and how did you bring your colleagues at DBJ on board to embark on a brand new activity?
Yes, so the center, the WEC, is our new business in the DBJ. And I'm not a real entrepreneur, but I'm like an entrepreneur because I launched the new center in DBJ. It is very traditional banks to provide long-term loan to industries. So the reason why I started these centers is when I was in the U.S., I saw many differences of entrepreneur activities among U.S. and Japan. And I found ecosystem at Silicon Valley. And after I back to Japan, I want to contribute to improve the circumstances or environment of entrepreneurs, which is poorer in Japan in terms of education or funding or hiring people or M&A, including M&A attitude. And in 2011, the earthquake hit Japan. There is little hope in Japan. So I want to start something for renewed growth to Japan. I plan to start to support entrepreneurs. And I present this plan in DBJs. And some board members are very supportive to my plans. So this is, I started a new business in DBJs.
Great. Thank you so much, Kurihara-san. So we're going to move now to the panel of female CEOs. So I'll ask our panelists to please come to the stage. I'm going to move to the podium to make the introductions. Please join me in thanking Kurihara-san for her excellent presentation.
Thank you.
Ranked 131. I'm sorry, the mic was not on before. 131 in the world. And in addition to her business endeavors, Ms. Cole has given a lot back to her community. There are a couple of projects that particularly moved me. One is dismantling the cradle to prison pipeline. And the other one is building a leadership pipeline for Asian women. She is also co-founder of Pantheon of Women, a filming company dedicated to telling the stories of strong women so we can change how society perceives the role and the potential of women. Then we're going to hear from Fujiyo Ishiguro, who is president and CEO of NetEar Group. And after working at Brother Industries and Swarovski Japan, Ms. Ishiguro obtained an MBA from Stanford and founded a high-tech specialty consulting firm in Silicon Valley, where she has given advice to clients such as Yahoo and Netscape. The company she founded, NetEar Group, was listed in the mother section of the Tokyo Exchange in 2008. Mrs. Ishiguro has also provided advice to the Japanese government. She has participated in some very important panels. One that caught my eye was called, the panel was called The Future to Choose. And in 2014, the Japan Times named Ms. Fujio one of the 100 next generation CEOs in Asia. And we're also going to hear from Sachiko Kuno, who is president and CEO of the S&R Foundation. She obtained a PhD in biochemical engineering from Kyoto University. And Dr. Kuno, working with Dr. Ueno, founded Artec Ueno, a company that now holds 900 patents and has released breakthrough medicines. Dr. Kuno and Dr. Ueno launched the Sucampo Group here in Bethesda, Maryland. And I believe since 2012, Dr. Kuno has been in charge of the S&R Foundation, whose mission is to promote talented individuals working in science, the arts, social entrepreneurship. She is quite a presence here in D.C. She runs, for example, the Halcyon House, which is an incubator and accelerator. Many people have benefited from her work. And last year, Forbes Japan named Dr. Kuno one of the world's 100 most powerful women. So with that, I'll ask Donna to please get us started.
Oh, great. So I was given some questions, and so part of them was what were some of the critical junctions I faced in starting my own business, some of the lessons that I'd learned that I would share with other women business owners or other entrepreneurs, and our experience with doing business with Japanese companies, were they different or the same as the U.S., and then a few tidbits of what I would say to young women who want to start their own business or mature women who want to start their own business. So in terms of critical junction for me was I was young when I started, 27. I was divorced. I had a daughter. I did not have a chemical degree, which probably would have been very, very helpful to get me started quicker. But I had customers who asked me to start my own business. And I think mentors and sponsors are so important. And I had a mentor who said, you can do it. Just go do it. And I think for many of us, we just need somebody to believe in us and say, go do it. And just go and do it. I think the other thing was hiring employees. One thing is hiring the right employees for the right positions, right? So we continued to move employees to and change their titles, their job descriptions to fit their strengths. And I think that took me a while to understand that. To also give people training that wasn't just about job training, but was also about human effectiveness training. How can you take what you learn to use not only on the job but at home and in community to improve your life and those of others? Other critical junctures, I think, is asking questions. It is so important to continue to ask questions because if you don't ask those questions, you don't know what the needs are of your customer, you don't know how to service them properly. And from that was one of our largest contracts we ever got was a barge and a half of methanol in drums going to Egypt. And the question I asked was, when does the ship need to arrive in Cairo? When at the time, there was a shortage of methanol around the world. And so all of the large distributors, the producers, couldn't meet the needs of the customer. And all I did was ask that one question, when do you need it? What's the date? And it was 6 weeks out. Long enough for a company to produce the material, for me to get the barge in, to drum it, get it on the dock and off to the customer. So we were able to land that contract that I don't think we would have had I not asked those questions. So those are some of my lessons learned along the way. Also along the way, you were talking about earlier the need for mentors in business and how they fail along the way. They may start out good and then fail later. And I think the failure rate is because they don't do SWOT analysis and be able to use that to drive their business strategically, right? We've changed our model, business model, probably 5 times since we started 36 years ago. And had I not done that, I think we would be out of business as well. So that's important that you understand the trends that are happening. How is that affecting your business? How is that affecting your customers, your suppliers? So how will you position yourself in the future so that you'll be successful? So that was key. Doing business with the Japanese companies, it's been very interesting. Yeah, you know, as they are hip in anime and manga, they are steeped in culture and tradition. So what we found is in, let's say, 1979, a large trading company would not do a joint venture with us. And the reason why was because I was a woman, but more importantly, I was a Japanese-American woman. And they told me they weren't going to do business with us because of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, probably because of that was the reason why I started my own business. So I have to look back and say, well, maybe that was a good thing, right? Because I might be in business in a joint venture with a Japanese company today. But, you know, that taught me something, too, about how forward but yet how steeped in tradition they are in terms of doing business with women. So I'm glad to see changes on the horizon. We do business with Japanese companies, and I'll have to tell you, it's a long sell, but it's also a very long relationship, and they reward you with more business if you do the right things at the right time in the right way. And you do have to learn how to do business their way. And, you know, for the most part, I'd have to say it's a good way, because they all are about managing risk and how do you make sure that you're being competitive. How do you make sure that you're taking them to the next level in terms of competitiveness and technology? So that's been very good for us. In terms of if you were to start your own business today, I think it's a wonderful opportunity because there's so much activity out there in terms of technology, service. The cost of things are to start a business is much cheaper. It's acceptable to work out of your home. During my days, you couldn't do that. You had to have iron in the ground. Right, for them to even talk to you. Outsourcing was not popular. Now you can outsource and it's okay. So I would have to say there's a lot of reasons why women should start their own business and will be able to be successful because they're flexible, they're innovative, they're creative, and they're collaborative. But most importantly, I think they do want to be compassionate about what they do in terms of being good, ethical, caring, and compassionate leaders. And as I said earlier, we in our conversations privately, that we just need to make sure that we put ethical, caring, compassionate leaders at decision tables to change the world and make it a better place. So thank you.
Thank you so much. That was terrific. Shiguro-san?
Yeah.
Oh, the mic is following you. maybe it's easier to
take it off.
Yeah, and then when you come back. Oh, okay, the chair.
All right. Thank you for the invitation. It's very honored to be here. My slide.
Oh, she's going to.
Am I in the way? Hmm? Do I need to move?
No, you're okay. They can look up above us.
All right, starting from my career. When I graduated from university in Japan, this is in a picture of a placement office. All the job posting, literally stated, male only. That's 100%. So it's obviously the violation of a constitutional law, but no one cared. But fortunately, in a few years after, big corporations started hiring a 4 years college female student. You know, I was hired by Brother Industries, that's my hometown, and it is really fortunate I found my favorite job, that is working with engineers. Japanese engineers, just excellent. They are not socialized, but they create great things. I love to work with them. So since then, that's my career. Also, I studied the first women's rugby football team, by the way. I faced another challenge when I was 30 years old. I gave a birth for my son. I could not find any daycare center opening after 6 p.m. So instead of pursuing dual work as a mother and a manager of a European company, I just gave up Japan, you know, came to United States to get the MBA degree for Stanford. The Stanford at Silicon Valley totally changed my insight. Because of the gender discrimination in Japan, you know, before coming to Stanford, I was thinking to just want to be equal opportunity other, you know, male employee, male student have, want to be a, you know, manager of a big corporation. But after I came to U.S., Stanford, Silicon Valley, they just love entrepreneur. You know, 9 out of 10 students want to start up, never want to work for, you know, company, big corporation. You know, everyone in Silicon Valley, they love entrepreneur. For example, I, you know, so went to a drugstore, you know, people talking to me, what are you doing? I'm telling them, oh, I have a very small company of my own. You know, people talk about, wow, well, this woman has a, you know, company. They just love it. I was, you know, I was really happy to start up my own company. So my son was also very happy. I graduated with my son. And then somehow, you know, so I participated in the management buyout for Netgear Group in the U.S. And then I found, you know, founded the Netgear Group in Japan. I was very few women, you know, to, you know, go to IPO in the industry, IT industry. I was also awarded to be a Woman of the Year by Nikkei in 2009. So that was my career. And I move on to some my argument to not to, don't put in a limit for yourself. This is a ratio of male and female, you know, college student. You know, male student is more than female, but it's just a little. It's not bad. But it's also the, you know, so it's, if it's going to the female ratio by department, look at the engineering department. Woman ratio is very, very little. It's a faculty ratio by department. It's same in the engineering. Woman ratio is very, very little. I was intimidated to, I really love mathematics when I was in high school. But when I, you know, so the, when I chose my major, I didn't take it because all the class for the science class and engineering department, that's all boys club. I was very intimidated. I did not go to you know, department of engineering. Instead, I went to you know, college. My major was economics. So the same things happen for the entrepreneur. This is a number of company having a female CEO. That's all includes small, medium company and Soho. But number, I think that's not really bad. You know, 1/10 of the company have female CEO. But if you go to, if you look at the number of the public company having a female CEO, it's less than 1%. It also, the, you know, in terms of directors, ratio for the public company, in Japan is only 1.1%. there are tons of issues to challenge. You know, it's also the tons of hurdle for female entrepreneur. However, I think same as choosing your major, woman CEO, woman founder tend to choose the what they like, what they can do. You know, women, I was so often invited to be a speaker for the female entrepreneurship conference and seminars. You know, I observe most of the female CEO founders tend to choose very woman-centric business, or let's say HR, you know, marketing, you know, the textile, general merchandise. That is what they can do, not what they want to. All the boys choose they really want to. You know, they really want to be big. But a female tend to choose some small business. I think the biggest hurdle we have is a woman by herself. They put some limit by herself. I think that's my observation. That's my argument. There's some limit of hurdle of woman startup. Finally, I joined an organization called EO last year. It has over 12,000 members in the world. You know, this is sort of my critics to myself. I never liked networking. I never liked a party. But however, because I believe in myself, I believe my business skill, I believe my business sense is okay, excellent. But however, you know, after joining this organization, it has every month we have a forum, fixed member, we share the experience and understand what other people are doing. In Tokyo chapter, they have over 200 members. In a forum, you know, they have an IPO forum, they have a post-IPO forum. We can share, you know, business, personal experience. I guess networking with, you know, similar environment is very important to grow the business. I would say if I joined this organization, I could go to IPO much earlier. So I think the learning each other is very important. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was great. Dr. Kunov, if you would like to.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mireya-san, and thank you so much for coming. And my name is Sachiko Kuno. I live in Washington, D.C. now. Over 20 years, and I moved from Japan and to the D.C. to establish Sukempo Pharmaceutical, that is a biopharmaceutical company. As Mireya-san introduced me kindly, kind of a serial entrepreneur, and I co-founded three biotech companies. One is in Japan, and two is United States, and two of those went to public already, and the third one is the newer company and focusing on the vaccine treatment and creating a new type of vaccine for infectious diseases and cancer-related the treatment. So that's my background is science, and I was educated in Japan and Kyoto University as a chemist, and I went to the technology engineer department, as you said. That is why I realized that why I am only the one of the six women among thousands in the technology and engineer department of the Kyoto University. But looking back to me and to my life, I was born in Japan less than 10 years after Second World War ended. So I was born in a small town in the countryside. So that my parents and our parents, even the graduates, the college graduate, but they did not have quite enough time and opportunity to run at university because of war. So that they are very much like us, and I have the two siblings and my sister and my younger brother, and over three, they wanted us to do there as much as possible what we like to do. So that is, I am very much lucky because my parents are pushing me to go to the university like Kyoto University and to get into the engineering technology department. So there's quite lucky, and I have a very good education in Japan. And for example, that when I was the doctoral course student at Kyoto, and my professor hasn't had any experience to teach the women. Yeah, female student in the past. So that he didn't think he could be the only one good teacher or not. So he sent me to the Munich, Germany, so that I can accept to the other female professor, the female student, so that I can feel what would be their role model, what kind of the life I can see for the future. So I'm very much lucky, I think. However, I like to share such an experience together with the younger generation people. So that what I'm doing now in Washington, D.C. through the foundation is to create some sort of ecosystem for the young generation people to share time and space together with us, and to think about how to create new idea and audacious thought and to change the world better. So that is kind of the activity of what I'm doing now, is to select 8 people from the worldwide. And so that I normally received 200 or 250 applications from the worldwide, and to be selected to be their fellow at incubator. So the probably if you think about what kind of incubator I'm running, so that we are running a social impact incubator. But amazing thing where we are in the United States, because many people can utilize a business the model and economics from the economic side and to create a new idea to be reaching the final success. So that is we are focusing on social impact. However, 80% of the people created a for-profit organization, so that we can be more sustainable, the powerful organization, and which can be changing the world into the better world. So I think that's what I'm doing is based upon the science and based upon that my experience to be handling the two companies in the business side. However, my final goal is always how to create the new world and better world, and based upon what are we doing. So they're getting together with you and getting together everyone in Washington, D.C. or Silicon Valley or Tokyo or the worldwide. And I think, of course, we can utilize economic power and business power, because that is a quite powerful tool for us to utilize to change the world into the better the manner. However, I think that to me, the final thought as an entrepreneur or the business person or a scientist or the researcher, I think whatever, I think that I would like to see what would be the final goal for the society and the community, and getting together, and how can we lead to the final goal together. So I think cross-pollination is quite important for us now to think about. So that I would like to have your thought from the business side. I would like to have your thought the public side. I would like to have your thought social sector side, and getting together and to create a new type of momentum or new type of movement and to change the world in the better. So that is, I would like to share with you. So that to be the entrepreneur, that is fun and easy to do, because you could be the boss every time so that you can start from yourself. So I think yes, my experience showed me, I think, and because if you want to do some sort of new business, I think to be entrepreneur or to be creating a startup, that might be easier thing. However, if we want to go to the final goal, of course, that is quite difficult issue, the hard hurdle, the tough hurdle. However, as long as you're seeing where you're going, I think that can be overcome finally. So that I really would like to share that moment, that feeling, and with young people and people who is now thinking to create a startup.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It has been really an inspiring set of remarks from everybody. And I want to bring all of you in and to have a very active conversation with our panelists because this is such a unique opportunity. Before I do that, let me just ask a couple of questions. I promise I'll be brief because you have been very patient and I want to hear your views. I would like to ask all the panelists if they would like to comment on the following. When I introduced the event, I highlighted the disadvantages, if you will, of being a female entrepreneur. Now I want to turn things around and ask you, in which ways do you think that being a woman is an asset? It provides you with a unique insight, with a unique way of tackling an issue. It opens opportunities for making connections. In which ways should we think about gender as an asset and not a disadvantage? Anybody that would like to comment on this?
Sure. I think women are more collaborative. Mm-hmm. And they can also are more, they can recognize where there's a need quickly and how can we solve that problem. Although, you know, men like to quickly solve problems, right? If you tell them what's going on in your life, they want to solve it. When you just want them to listen, you know, you just need to vent sometimes. But, you know, I think women do have an opportunity to kind of take it to the next level, if you will, and they're very innovative and flexible. So I think on that part, I think women will excel and do, actually, and it is an advantage.
Excellent.
Nowadays, companies for the innovation, one is diversification and communication among,
you know. Oh, I'm sorry for you, son. Your mic got disconnected.
Okay.
We're almost there. Some mic challenges, but they'll be solved very quickly.
Sorry.
So, I guess my management style, I never thought that that's different from, male management. But however, recently I listen to people. You know, especially people on job site. Then I tend to change my decision. So I think changing the decision is not that bad. Just listening to people, understand what's going on. Now I think this capability, woman has more this type of capability. You know, men is more centralized, really top down. That is also the asset in the history, but we never challenge, you know, this management style. I think, you know, listening to people and for the, you know, diversified, you know, people and kind of collaborate the opinion and the final, making a final decision is, I guess, a woman's asset.
Thank you very much.
It's me? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that being the woman and I think there's many and good thinking to be the woman as an entrepreneur or that the decision making at a position. And of course, the collaborative and listening to the people. And to me, that to start, you know, start a company. And I think it's easy to have many talented, to access to many talented women. So that's because as many talented women and come to me and to offer their working together and from the beginning, from the scratch, even and our company is very small, the 2-3 people. And one of the first employee I had, you know, 20 years ago,
And she was hired as a secretary. However, she is so talented. So we decided to promote her as the manager within the 6 months. And the next year, she would be handling one of the projects, something like that. And she went to the VP position finally at the Sukempo Pharmaceutical when the Sukempo went to public. And as she had final title was a VP of the business development. And then after the Sukempo went to public, and she decided to come back to study the law, and she went to the part-time law school in 4 years, and she became the lawyer finally. So I think that many talented, I saw the many talented women by having the start a company, so that's the amazing thing to me. And the next thing is, so the having those talented people, I think talented male can come to join us. So the next stage for the startup company is having more the women talented, and that attract more male who can come to join us for creating a new company. And another thing, that a little tricky thing is, because when I was handling a company as a CEO, normally I realize that the expectation from outside is not so high. Normally they're very low because I am a woman. So that is, so I'm trying to utilize that one, the circumstances to show under-address and over-achievement strategy. So that is one of the good things for us to utilize.
Yeah. Thank you so much. So one last question, I promise, and that has to do with the notion of women as agents of change. Because I think that obviously, you know, womenomics is about leveling the playing field, equal pay for equal work, for example, and that's a very important part of the agenda. But I think, quite frankly, it goes beyond that. And I think that when women are trying to change the way in which companies run, the way in which they deal with human resource and so forth, they may actually bring about changes that enrich the lives of everyone, not just women, but also men. I'm talking about flexible working practices. I'm talking about cutting back on unnecessary work time and so forth. So all of you have already touched on this, but, you know, it's not just about how you launched your businesses, the entrepreneurial part, but now you all run very successful companies. So I was wondering, what difference does it make to your employees to have a female CEO? Do you think you have a different, you already touched on some of these issues, but for example, diversity programs. Do you do this differently, perhaps, than more established male-oriented companies? In which ways do you think there is this power of role models or very concrete strategies that benefit your employees because you bring a different eye, a different intuition to how you run a company?
Well, I think for me, we feed our employees, right? And so they get all kinds of food, but more importantly, often I always fix food that I can on those days. So they get another part of me that they probably wouldn't have otherwise. But, you know, not only that is that feeding people, I think, is something about yourself and home and life and giving of them and myself to them. But I think also in making time for them, you know, we have a policy in terms of venting. So, you know, you can come and you can vent, but you have to tell me in advance. You just want to come and vent. You don't want any advice. You don't want me to do anything. Just listen. And then there's another one where you say, I do want some advice. And so I'll give them advice. Or they have to say, I want to vent, but I need you to take some action. Mm-hmm. And so at least that way there's an expectation set for them and me. And a better communication style. So I think that's important. The thing about going through those ups and downs in business and having to let people mm-hmm. go, there was a point in time where we had a decision to make. How many people do we let go? Who do we let go? And I actually called a meeting and I said, look, we can let 3 people go in the company, or we can work as a team, and we could take X days off per month with no pay and work on this as a team. And I said, I'm going to let you vote. So, of course, they all voted, we will take days off with no pay. And so that allowed us to cut our budget by 5%, right, without having to let anybody go. Interesting enough, after it was over with, and I said, okay, everybody's got to come back to work now, they're like, well, we like that one day off or 2 days off without pay. So, you know, I think just looking at different things, we can change the environment inside the company as well as outside. So in terms of outside, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up, right? And also random acts of kindness. Mm-hmm. So I've decided to let everybody off for the day and to go out and do random acts of kindness. Now, the caveat is you got to come back and tell us what you did, right? Going to the beach and laying out there by yourself is not, you know, a random act of kindness. We want you to go help somebody else. And, you know, hopefully that would have a ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. And they would go out and do something nice, too, even if it's just smiling at other people who are sad, right?
Thank you very much. Any other comments?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is my personality or female personality, but I guess I don't have any big ego. You know, people call me my first name, Fujio, mm-hmm. and my organization has some, you know, so the corporate structure. However, the culture is really flat. You know, people come in my room, you know, call me Fujio, how are you doing, and other things. You know, especially female employee, something they have some problem. Okay, let's say, you know, so work time or daycare center things, just, you know, normal stuff come into my room, and they said, I have a problem with you. And I'm very flat and, you know, easy to listen, you know, people, and having some problem, which maybe, you know, male top management could not reach. That's create a very flexible organization culture. So that I think that's maybe not, I don't know, you know, so my personality or pretty much female, you know, top management can create this culture.
Anything or should we? All right, so now I'm going to open it up to the public. We're going to take two questions at a time, please, because time is short. There are going to be mics going around, so if you want to raise your hand, and then when the mics comes to you, you can identify, please, yourself, and then ask a brief question. So I see a hand over there, and then Abigail.
Hi, my name is Tracy Huang from CMI International. Thank you very much for your very inspiring talks and your career histories. You talked about culture earlier. I was just wondering, as women entrepreneurs and CEOs, what kind of specific policies do you see implemented that you probably think of that other companies could perhaps do that would bring more entrepreneurs and more employee retainment going forward? So more on the policy end of things for your own companies. Thank you.
Thank you. And then next, Abigail, and then we'll ask for comments from you.
Thank you. Is it on? Yeah, thank you for this excellent panel. My question goes back to the title of the Potential of Female Entrepreneurs in Japan. I've seen many excellent entrepreneurs. My question is, how are we integrating their excellence and activities into the broader Japanese society? How important do you think, for example, having women on boards is? I'm curious whether any of you are on Japanese boards. And I mention this simply because Prime Minister Abe, as part of Womenomics, made a big push to have women board members. And I think that his target is slowing. And I'm really curious about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So we'll take those two questions. Any comments on those questions?
I could take the first one. The second one, I can't take. But the first one about policies, you know, you have to have policies. One, that you're meeting federal government regulations. Secondly, is what else can you do above and beyond? Because obviously, we're in competition for good employees, right? Globally as well as locally. So, you know, what can we offer that somebody else might feel as a benefit that they'd want to come and stay and work with us? Because, as you know, today there's a lot of people who continue to change jobs every 2 to 3 years. And, you know, as an employer, you know, that's pretty frightening because you invest so much in an employee and you want to keep them and retain them as much as possible. So that communication is so important as to, you know, what's the next step for you? How do we train you? How do we empower you to do other things? And that is all about policies and guidelines. So empowering people with guidelines. And I think as you go, you develop more and more policies because somebody hasn't done anything totally wrong until something happens and you go, oh, we need a policy for that, right? Mm-hmm. And a policy for how much concession can you make in a deal, right? Mm-hmm. You've got a contract, you're rolling down the road, things look good, and then all of a sudden something happens, and you're looking at your numbers and you're thinking, geez, you know, I thought we were making 15%, and we're only making 10. Or in some cases, there may be an individual transaction where you're actually paying the customer to do business with you. And so you have to figure out what happened. And then when you start asking all the questions, you find out, oh, my God, you know, somebody made a decision without asking other people and not realizing the financial impact to the company. So I think that's when good policies get put into place. But, you know, we all think everybody has good common sense and will do the right thing. But to also, you know, come back and talk to the team about what's going on instead of just feeling like you're in control of this account and you know everything about the account, but you don't know how it affects the rest of the company.
Very good.
I think for the first question, I think what I'm wondering is always start companies and to create a new startup and to grow up to 100 people, 150 people. So that I'm not wondering, and a very big care organization. However, what I'm doing always is to share the partnership, the ownership and with employees. And so that having a new idea and to create a new project and together and a new program project together and giving that responsibility and power and empower to the people who created a new idea. So that is quite important for me to share the ownership, partnership with my staff team. Yeah.
Am I in charge of a second question?
Yes. I'm sorry, I cannot do that.
Let's say, you know, Abenomics has done a lot of things, especially for women, because he really promoted promote women. Mainly because Japan has faced big challenge that is decreasing the population. Mm-hmm. You know, over the maybe in 50 years, Japan's population would be a 2/3. That it means our economic activity, the size of the economy, would be 2/3. So easiest way to, you know, combat this hot difficulties is women coming back to our labor force, labor market, also put a lot of more management to, you know, corporation. But however, you know, at this moment, the things are big corporation versus small company or startup. The culture and also the implementation is very different. I don't really see that some discrimination in a small company, medium-sized company, or startups. Women is very competitive. For example, you know, our company, women are more competitive, you know, kind of lead a project. I sometimes ask women, you know, female employee, can you talk to male more gentle? But however, big corporations are very different. I heard a lot of things from an employee of big corporation, a lot of gender discrimination still very high, the discrimination. So that's very different. And after Abe took the office, sometimes big corporation management come to, you know, listen to me, you know, come to my office, how they can implement this policy. You know, I advise them, you know, how to do it. You know, that's also the kind of change the environment, change the culture of big corporation that dominate the Japanese economy.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So next round of questions, I'll take two at a time. I see a hand here, and then these two hands across from each other. Jennifer, you went past them.
Hi, my name is Mariam Janani from Dahlberg Global Development Advisors, and thank you again for all your remarks. I'm particularly interested in diversity in tech. Tech provides a lot of growth within ICT or within other sectors as well. And there's been a lot of discussion in the Silicon Valley around diversity in tech, particularly women's participation. And you mentioned that you see problems starting within engineering or computer science where there's not a lot of women going into those fields within education. And so I'm wondering, are there any other difficulties that women encounter, particularly in the tech industry in Japan? Thank you.
Thank you. And then if you can pass the mic, thank you.
Dave Fitzgerald, retired State Department. Just a broad sort of philosophical question about failure, which both Japanese men and women face, and failure in business versus failure in a personal sense. Traditionally, there's been only one sense of failure, and it's both business and personal. I'm wondering in the last 20 years, perhaps, the degree to which there is a change in the thinking about failure and a willingness and ability to see failure in business as something not necessarily related to a personal defect in any way.
Great. So tech and failure, fear of. Who would like to take those questions? Women in high tech, maybe, for the
I think that, you know, so promoting a woman in a particular industry needs quantity and quality. You know, both are lacking, missing at this moment. For example, you know, so the I was talking about a major, you know, high tech, you know, tech, you know, technology major. In terms of the number, I think very few, you know, few percent of, you know, women ratio in the department. It's very, very the challenging things. You know, how can we, you know, qualify the person in the certain, you know, limited number? That's, I, you know, so my observation. How to overcome it? Just encourage. If you like mathematics, just go to, you know, engineering department. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think another point I like to point it out is from the investor side. I think that from the investor side, and still there's some tendency to invest more to the male, or and especially what I think in this country or other country too. So that what I'm thinking now to empower the young female, the tech, the talent, and I think we need to create good investor. And to invest the money and also the skill, whatever, to the good talented and the tech guys. And so this is both sides to create a good cycle and starting from entrepreneurship and grow in a company and grow in the personally and come back to the to the investor or the good philanthropist and whatever. So I think that we need to have a good cycle for the women. So that having good investor to the women is another angle and we need to think about. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Sasai-san?
Maybe after Sasai-san, and then you can come back to
that. Hello. Thank you. It's a wonderful panel, and I enjoyed listening to all the members. But let me just play the role of devil's advocate here. And I fully endorse Womanomics 2.0, the entrepreneurship, promotion of entrepreneurship, just wonderful thing. And I think we really is something that we, in Japan, we have to put an emphasis on. But yet, the two things in the remarks that worries me. One is at age 42 is average age of starting entrepreneurship. And second is closure rate is very high. Mm-hmm. And those are two things. And so I'm just a bit worried that sometimes the entrepreneurship is considered to be just another form of employment in Japan. It is because you're not able to be employed in a regular, as a company employee. So why don't you just start entrepreneurship? I think that's too easy to think in that way. Maybe for the entrepreneurship, work-life balance would be even more difficult than just being employed at the company. So I think that entrepreneurship education really starts earlier rather than, you know, starting at age 42, maybe at college days, unless you have some ideas and the things that you really want to do for your life. Very difficult to think about starting your own company and going through all the difficulties to be entrepreneur. So I just wonder what would be needed in order to really nurture entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur. And as you say that after many years, the female entrepreneurs are more profitable than male entrepreneurs, but you have to endure and sustain. So what we should do, and so that's what I would like you to address and think about it.
Thank you very much for that very insightful question. So we're almost out of time. So last set of remarks to address Asai-san's question, also the question about failure, fear of, that we did not get to. So Fujio-san, I think you had a comment on that.
About a failure. Mm-hmm. It's very important. I live in Silicon Valley, and in Silicon Valley, failure is learning. You know, it's really encouraged, you know, so to us to do it. You know, so that's why startup became grow because, you know, we challenge, if we fail and try and error, you know, to learn a lot of things. But however, failure in Japan, it's just the end of your life. So that has to be changed. But I think, you know, so the reason why in Silicon Valley, startup grow because big corporation purchase the product and service from startup. In Japan, no big corporation want to purchase any service, product from startup because the person in charge of purchasing is afraid of failure. You know, people in Japan, you know, management, just want to be the same as other company. If they purchase from the big corporation as like other company do, you know, no one criticize them. If the person want a challenge to purchase from startup, if they fail, they would be fired. So that's a notion not only for the startup, but also the big corporation. That has to be changed. In Silicon Valley, the reason why they purchase from startup, because they want to be more productive. So I guess the kind of rule of a big corporation has to be changed to be a more productive. Then, you know, the person in charge of, you know, procurement or, you know, purchasing could challenge to hire, you know, more technical, more advanced product. I think that's one of the method to, you know, change all Japan.
Thank you so much. So I believe we're out of time, but I just want to thank everybody. For me, it's been a privilege to share the stage with these remarkable women. So please join me in thanking them for making the time to be here.